Go Strategic is pleased to present the School of Kingdom Citizenship. This teaching is entitled The 12 Master Principles, Principles 10, 11, and 12 by Dennis Peacock.
Hello, Dennis Peacock here again, dealing with the 12 Master Principles. Hope this has been helpful to you up to this point in time, and you see why it is relevant in terms of knowledge and life experience for individuals, organizations, families, nations, et cetera, et cetera. And it has been my joy to be able to work on these principles and deploy them and see they actually bear truth and they bear good fruit. So we are going to begin with Master Principle number 10, Justice and Equality. Justice and equality, two of the most misunderstood concepts in the modern world. So I'm looking forward to bringing clarity, experiencing clarity with you on the difference between justice and equality. And the namesake I have for this is on investments and keeping the game fair. On investments and keeping the game fair. Let's look first, number one, at the definitions of what justice and equality mean from a dictionary point of view. First, justice, the concept and practice that justice is achieved when people are rewarded or punished by their inputs, their knowledge, skill set levels, and agreed upon terms. I want to do that again, and you can see that in your notes. The concept and practice that justice is achieved when people are rewarded or punished by their inputs, their knowledge, skill set levels, and agreed upon terms. In other words, justice is receiving your due reward for what you have done, what you've contributed, the value that you bring to a given situation. Whereas, equality is the concept that all people are treated the same in terms of opportunity, agreed upon contracts or privileges, and punished or rewarded in terms of a common response to the law. Equality is most simply communicated by equal under the law. No unique, no special privileges. The rich, the mighty, the lesser, as it were, we are all treated the same virtues relative to the law. Virtues, rewards, punishments, all of it is the same. And those two concepts, the concept of justice, which is based on investments, based on skill sets, based on the value that I bring to a situation, and equality, those two issues is what people demand, so to speak, in order to have a government that is honest, fair, and equitable. So let's look at number two, examples of justice. Justice taxation policy. We're not all getting the same level of taxation policy. A flat tax, if you had a flat tax implementation, which, by the way, is the biblical model, then everybody would be paying the same percentage. They would be equal under the laws of taxation. But largely, mostly, globally, taxation is what we call progressive. That is, it gets greater based on the abundance, with the assumption that the more wealthy have the capacity to contribute a greater amount than those who are less able. That is an example of justice, where there are circumstances that cause, in the sight of the culture, that it different amounts of reward are equitable based on wealth. That is the ability to pay. Now, here would be, I think, a really good example of justice. It would be the salary disparities in the professional sports. In the NBA, National Basketball, National Football, National Baseball, Global Football, i.e. what we call soccer, the salaries are not the same. There is not equality. There is justice. In other words, their salaries are based on their skill sets, their perceived value to the team, the contracts they sign, and nobody makes a fuss of it. It is the difference between the inputs, the investments that are made in the sport. I trust that's clear. Everybody that says we should be equal in all things, why don't you interrupt the sports world? Why don't you interrupt the corporation world? Why don't you interrupt the world of arts? I guarantee you that there is a great salary difference in the entertainment world between the superstars and the less radiating, as it were. That is an example of justice. Justice is measuring results by inputs and the level and value of the inputs. Preferred versus common stock. There's another example of where the return is not necessarily the same based on the kind of stock that you buy. Could have many other examples, but okay. Equality. Now, examples of equality, very simple. Equal, everybody is equal under criminal laws. Now, that is, again, there's variation. There's degrees of punishment that differ, but everybody should get the same punishment. If the crime is the same, then everybody should get the same punishment for doing it. The rich should not have a different level of punishment than the poor. If the circumstances are the same, equality under the law is a foundation of responsible government. All equal access. That is a huge issue, especially relative to racism or discrimination based on sex or religion or things like that. We should have equal access. And here in the United States, that is something that we are putting a lot of energy in attempting to change, but needs to be changed in many situations where equal access was not available. Equal access under the law. That is equality. All legal agreements and contracts. If we make agreements, legal contracts, it states the terms of the contract, and anybody that signs on that contract level, if it's equal, it should be the same for rich, poor, different ethnic groups, different sex, male, female. It doesn't matter. Whatever we say is something that we do in common, then no favoritism, no cronyism, no secret agreements, no bribery. That is a huge issue in terms of equality. That's why bribery is so destructive in a culture, because it creates mistrust that the rich or the special privileged, we say we're doing the same thing, or we say we have equal access, but we do not have equal access. So, major points. I've touched some of them already. Skill set inequalities. Those go back to Ephesians 2:10, the whole issue of God giving everybody special gifts. We're not equal in terms of engiftment. We're not equal in terms of skill sets. And in a just society, remuneration is going to take into account value, skill set level, engiftment, etc. You are going to have different inputs, different values, therefore different results. It is a tragedy, and that is a well-chosen word. It is a tragedy in most of the cultures in the world that there is no clear understanding about the difference between justice and equality. Now, here's a great example of where in the training of our children, we should be giving them the clarity that the brother, the sister, whatever, extenuating circumstances may make inputs different, but we just need to make sure that we are having an agreement with our children as terms of what is equal as contrasted with what is just. Accepting justice is a reality that we have to deal with. You cannot make everybody the same, except under the laws of equality. But justice demands that we recognize the differences. That is one of the reasons why hardball socialism is so unfair, so unbiblical, so ungodly, is it doesn't recognize differences. We cannot make different what, or we rather, we cannot make equal what God made different. We cannot make equal what inputs and labor for. Why do we pay doctors so much? Well, you go through many, many years. You're going through 20 or more years of education. The inputs determine that your salary is going to be based on justice, not equality. Again, these are things that have to be built into the foundation of all organizations. The rules need to be clear and clearly set out for anybody that joins an organization. What are the rules? Where are we equal and where are we just? I've never heard, I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but I have never heard anything in the public television, the public media, which deals with the difference between equality and justice. And all we get is all the conflicts of the ignorance. And it's got to stop. If I could swing on a rope and get everybody's attention in this nation, here in the U.S. and beyond, it would be an immediate clarification and a recognition that justice and equality can't be the same because we're not all equal in terms of value and gifts to organizations or endeavors. We are equal before the law, but we're not equal in terms of the differences based on inputs. Without equality before the law, there's no trust. With equality in the attempt to equalize justice, there's no justice there because we're not all equally skilled. I don't know how many different ways to say that, to make that point. But again, bribery, secret agreements, favoritism, et cetera, those things kill trust in the organization. And we want to make sure we are very, very clear on this. Now, there's a caveat here that I can't get into depth, but once we see where there has not been equal opportunity, then there can be the whole issue of how do we handle quotas or how do we handle special events? I believe that it is possible, based on unequal access, to make reparation, so to speak, in that situation. But you couldn't make it permanent. That would be a violation of the distinctives between justice and equality. I hope that is clear. Now you can see why I'm put the tag on this, on investments, recognizing the difference of investments and keeping the game fair. Investments gives me justice. Equality under the law gives me fairness. I hope that is clear. And you can see why I make such a big point of, when are we going to commonly educate? When are we going to train people and define the terms whenever they get involved in any organization? This organization is based on the principles of justice and equality. So let's move now to master principle number 11. Results-based reality. Results-based reality. What does results-based reality give us? It gives us an accurate analysis of the truth of a situation. There's a phrase we have here, old-fashioned in the United States, you know, the proof is in the pudding. That is, results tells us what's true and what is not true. Results-based reality. How many of you besides me believe that our culture is filled with nonsense theoretically? We've got theoretically this, theoretically that, but when you put the idea into implementation and your implementation has been correct, you're going to get a result that tells you whether or not your ideas are close or 10 miles away from what you say they produce. And in the political world, this is a disaster, so to speak. And I would just pick right away the issue of socialism. Socialism, wherever it's a great theory, wherever it has been applied, it doesn't work. Among other reasons, because socialism does not take into account the reality of justice and equality. Right there. Socialism doesn't take into account the power of economics, which is choice. Socialism is strong, and its greatest strength is on the whole issue of caring for the greater community. But it is a disaster relative to the issue of choice and, again, justice. Definitions, point one. The belief that theories, ideas, and programs should be tested, and from the test based on results rather than hope, bias, projections, or ideological paradigms. That's a bunch of stuff in that one sentence, but it does cover the issue. A results-based reality deals with the fact that theories, ideas, programs, or actions should be tested, and from the results, we then have the truth about whether or not those ideas actually work. Are they principles, like the 12 master principles? I'm presenting all of this based on the reality that applying the 12 master principles properly, you are going to get essentially the same results in every generation, every ethnic group, and every jurisdiction of government. If you apply these things to your personal life, if you apply them to your family, if you apply them in the spiritual world, if you apply them in the economic world, if you apply them in the civil government realm, you're going to get essentially the same results, and you will be able to know whether or not idea is a theory, an ideology that is not based on truth. In short, you're getting the scientific method which verifies what ideas actually produce what results. Examples of results-based reality. The scientific process is exhibit A of essentially what results-based reality demands. You have one, a theory, a proposition, or an idea. You have a key concept that is in that proposition. You have an invested application. In other words, if we're going to test something, we're going to have to make an investment, time, energy, money, etc., to see if this is true in some form. Then you're going to have the results. And then the issue is a data analysis of what did this idea actually produce when applied? Do we need to analyze in terms of what we can modify? Maybe we didn't take into account X, Y, Z in the way we implemented the idea. So let's modify the application. And after we've gone through the modification analysis, we are now going to have results. That is essentially the scientific model. It is standing apart, not trying to make something true, but trying to discover, is it true? And what can we do to verify it so that we are convinced that the application of the idea was in alignment with the theory of what was going to happen. And then we analyze, we have the data, we have the results of the application of that idea, that concept, that principle, that public policy, et cetera. Now we can begin to base our lives on results-based realities. Now, in my personal life, you know, a lot of what I do has been theoretical, certainly, you know, in terms of teaching, theoretical in the sense you're putting out propositions on the assumption that the proposition is true. And obviously, you're not lying to people. You can be ignorant and omit things that should have been involved in the way you describe things. But assuming that you're dealing with what has been verified by results, then you can be confident and you can build a life around those results. Now, I was a martial arts instructor for almost 20 years, and in some ways that kept whatever tenuous grip on sanity I have, because in anything physical, any sport, you can have a theory about what if I do this and what if I do that and let me try this and let me try that. And in martial arts, you get immediate feedback as to whether or not something works or whether or not it doesn't. You either get punched or kicked or put in a hold or whatever. And it was fun as an instructor, and this would be true in any situation, to have my students, as they got better and better, said, well, what if I do this? And I said, well, do it and let's see if what I'm telling you to do works. And don't you love reality? I mean, that is really when we talk about results-based reality. It is a measurement of integrity. Integrity is, I don't want this to work just because I want it to work. I want to build my life. I want to build my influence on people, situations, organizations. I want to build all those things based on results-based reality. I've watched, and once you're really clear on this concept, it's a little uncomfortable because you begin to see what the people you know and around you, what you hear on and experience in the media, all the nonsense that is passed on as being truth. The question is, where have you tested this? And my test is, as you know, is your proposition true in every generation? Would somebody 2,000 years ago, if they applied this idea correctly, would it have the same results as today? Is it true in every ethnic group? Or is it true in only one culture, but not true in another? Then I would say you have something that is not an absolute truth, or certainly a universal truth. It's got to be true in every generation, every ethnic group, and every jurisdiction. Again, I trust that you're clear on what we're saying here and all that we've been dealing with is I am saying to you, yes, I am. I am saying to you with, I believe, integrity, that these 12 master principles are in operation all the time. We're surrounded by the correct application or the misapplication or the ignorance that all these principles are operable all the time, everywhere. And the issue is, how do I connect myself? How do I align myself? How do I connect the people I love with these principles, these truths? How do we build organizations? How do we build families? How do we build churches? How do we build corporations? How do we build nations? How do we build governments where these 12 principles are not the only principles, but certainly recognized principles in what we're trying to do? Major points. Well, we've already talked a little bit about socialism, which in this age, this day that I'm living in and we're talking right now at this point, that is an issue that for many of us was a dead issue. When the Soviet Union threw in the towel in 1989, many of us, including yours truly, thought, well, at last we have a global recognition that socialism cannot produce what it says it can. Everywhere it's been applied, it doesn't work. Now, that doesn't mean that the principle of reciprocity is dead. The great strength and the hope of socialism is community, reciprocity. Do unto your neighbors, you'd have them do to you, et cetera, et cetera. But all the other baggage that is involved in socialism, not the least of which is the crush to creativity and energy when you remove choice and make economic activity mandated, you're actually going against God himself, who has created us different and created us with design that he wants designed, not command from some other part of the society that says, no, you can't do that. We need plumbers. So here's what we want you to do. Does God want you to be a plumber? God-ordained work is worship. Remember that concept, and that is a fact, avodah. Worship is a form of doing work that you were ordained to do, not that somebody else asked you to do or commanded you to do. Utopianism has killed hundreds of millions of people in the Soviet Union, in the China experience, in the Vietnam experience, in the Laos, the Cambodia, in the Cuba, in the Venezuela. How many situations do we have to see fail and absolutely destroy the lives of many and create totalitarianism that robs the joy and the freedom from life? How many situations do we have where results-based reality is fully operable, but people are ideologically, they're committed to an idea. They're not committed to truth. They're committed to an idea. They're not committed to reality. Now, you can hear the emphasis in my life. I don't want to be committed to ideas. I want to be committed to truth. And I've got to have the courage and the character when results are challenging something that I believe to be honest enough and say, you know, I may not be applying this properly. I don't know. I'll try other ways. But if this idea is not true, if it doesn't produce the reality and the results that I say it will, then I'm more than happy to be wrong because I want truth. I want reality. I want to work with people who want truth and reality. I want to be a part of organizations, companies, churches, nations, where the common ethic in that organization is we are committed to truth and reality, not our opinions, our wannabes, or our hopes. Forgive the preaching, but folks, you can imagine what the differences on this planet would be if we were committed to results-based reality. Capitalism, let me just say another quick scan on that, and again, a lot more I could say. I am not a capitalist. I'm a choice-based economic with reciprocity as the counterweight to what choice-based economics produces. Capitalism has got serious issues, quick ones. Debt-based currency. Our currency is based on debt, which means and facilitates we have no hard limits. If the world was mine, at least the amount of currency that we produce would be in some way linked to GDP. There has to be some kind of fixable, discernible reality that is the floor out from which we reason how much currency is appropriate. Since we are not doing that, we are committed and trapped by the unreality of debt and economic inflation. I can't imagine why people can't see that reality. There's got to be a concrete number that helps us decide how much debt we can go into or how great our policies based on debt can be based on the reality that if there's not limits in the creation of the currency, we've got built-in inflation, which destroys the value of people that save, destroys retirements, destroys the soundness of currency. The widening wealth gap between the really rich and the really poor. We still have not deployed anything that is working in that area. Service-based economies, rather than having a balanced economy where you're actually producing things. That's one of the great challenges we have right now in the Western world is our productivity and our efficiencies based on technology have created a situation where a large part of the population is in service-based areas in the economy. And service-based areas, you're not going to be able to produce the salaries, certainly at the level that we are now, to sustain a middle class. You've got to have a balance in an economy where service-based issues, which by their very nature don't create the value that creates profit, and you've got a problem with minimum wages and lower wages. The more people you put in the services, unless they're consistently raising their prices, their wage levels, you're going to destroy the middle class. And I don't hear many people talking about that yet. Some of you really hear and understand what I'm saying. The frozen middle class, that is what we have right now. It's freezing because of the disproportionate amount of service-based elements in our current economies. Last big one, not the end of the list, but greed and materialism. Capitalism has produced the materialistic reality of people buying things they don't need and creating things with built-in destruction, built-in breakdowns in the products, built-in throwaways, so to speak, in order just to accelerate the amount of economic activity. I don't know that I'll live to see it, but I'm hoping that as we mature more and more in culture, that we'll deal with the results of greed, the lust of the eyes, so to speak, biblically. Will it be able to deal better with greed, economic disparities, built-in destruction in our products, and the challenge of materialism and what that does to a culture, the devaluation of spiritual life, the devaluation of a life that is not lived at a speed where we can say speed kills. Speed kills in many ways based on the drive to enhance just the material dimension of our lives. Results-based reality. The proof is in the pudding. Accurate results tell us what is something really is. What's the nature of it? Hope that's helpful. So let's move now to the final, the 12th master principle, which, as I said in the beginning, the first master principle, transcendence, and the last master principle, the bridge of trust, are two bookends to major, major, major transcendent ideas. Number one, the concept that there are transcendent ideas. There are priorities of importance, which I'm assuming all of you recognize is real. And lastly, all activities between human beings are based on the bridge of trust. The bridge of trust. Our relational life. God builds relationally, and that is the only way he builds. All success is based on relationships. And what I'm saying here on the bridge of trust is on relational load limits. All bridges have a load limit. That is what they are engineered, the amount of weight they can handle at the same time, the maximum amount. And can they handle that without breaking down eventually? How much fortification is required to keep that load limit at the same strength or even greater? That is reality. What is the load limit of trust? That determines what can be done in an organization. What is the load limit of trust with the people? So, definitions. The bridge of trust is an analogy based upon the reality that human relationships are built and defined on the levels of trust and depth that exists between the people. Bridge of trust is an analogy based on the reality, an analogy of a bridge. Based on the reality that human relationships are built and defined with the levels of trust and the depth of that trust that exists between the parties. Examples, all contracts ultimately are based on the load limits of trust that are built into that agreement. Not the least of which is when you sign your name, when you agree to the contract, that now means that the load limit that I've just signed off on, I am able to perform. I have the resources and the commitment and the skill sets to perform as this contract merits that I just signed. All business is built on the bridge of trust. Do I trust that what I'm buying doesn't have built-in challenges in it that are going to make this agreement null and void? Do I trust the quality of the product? Do I trust the banking system? That's a great issue that we're in right now, especially because of the debt pressures. All banking investments, you know what investment bankers do? They assess the value of a project, and then they assess the value and the strength of the parties and their trust levels between them. And out of that analysis, if I'm a banker, I'm going to say your limit, we will invest up to $10 million. I believe you've got $10 million worth of reality in this project, and the bank will stand with you up to $10 million. To go to $50 million, guess what? That's a whole other level of load limit. There's got to be resources, assets, and strength enough in the partners and skill sets enough in the partners. And all of that is based on what? Trust that I have got the proper analysis of the relational and physical assets required to fulfill this project. Relational trust. How about credit card limits? There's a hardball area of trust. We'll trust you to spend up to $10,000 on this card. But as we analyze you and, you know, what there's what you represent that you can do, and there's what we estimate what you can do. And obviously, they're only going to give the amount of credit to where they see, where their trust level is with you. Beyond all that, how about marriage? How about covenantal reality? All marriage is a covenant. All business partnerships are covenants. They're agreements made with integrity and agreements made with the real assessment that I have the skills, I have the character, I have the resources, I have the knowledge, I have the relationships around me, the support systems. My support systems tell me that realistically, I can give myself to you for the rest of my life. I can give myself to you for this $10 million project. I can give myself, and I'm trusting that you have properly assessed what you can give and invest in this situation. What is a good business person? It's somebody who builds and recognizes the bridge of trust. What is a good marriage? It's two people who have come together on a bridge of trust that is maintained every day. Now, we know trust takes a while to grow. Love can be given, but trust is earned. I'm assuming all of you have learned more than one lesson in your life about the nature of trusting people. People you trusted and it didn't work out. People that you trusted and it worked out better than you thought it could. The scaling, that is the ability to trust, and then go to new levels of expansion. The more trust we have, the greater endeavors we can give ourselves to. I've, like all of you, I've had people I really, really liked and loved, but had to come to the point that I had to decide, what is my trust level of what we can do relationally? What is my trust level of what we can do to build in common projects? How strong is this bridge? Is it able? How many zeros can it handle? When I initial contemplated, when I had these 12 mess principles operable about 10 years ago, was when I really started self-consciously to deploy them, apply them in the way that I do. I thought, well, the simplest way to make this clear to anybody is the more zeros, the more money is involved. Some bridges will carry $1,000 worth of trust. Some bridges can carry $1 million worth of trust. Some bridges can carry $1 billion worth of trust. How about this? Some nations have built enough trust in their citizens. They can put it pretty well, do what they want and be sustainable. Right now, I dare not get off into this much. Right now, globally, we've got the lowest level of trust on the bridge between citizens and the institutions of their governments that in my 70 odd years I've ever seen. The bridge of trust between a government and its citizens is absolutely critical. And it's built when those who govern are applying the agreements that got people's votes. They were put into office, put into power, based on what they said they were going to do. And now we can measure whether or not the bridge of trust is being torn down or strengthened by the way those that we trust to govern us, from local levels to international levels. That trust level has got to be built and constantly reinforced if the nation is going to prosper and keep safety and liquidity and sustainability for the citizens. What's the load limit relationally with someone that you're in love with and want to be covenanted or married? Are you making an accurate assessment? Does your love have a major component of trust in it as well? Now, there's risk in every agreement. Indeed, faith. There's risk in faith until we come to the point where whatever we have faith in, we've moved beyond risk. The trust is absolute. The trust is concrete. Trust built on past experience. I trust you to the limit that our history together has shown you can be trusted. You can be trusted up to these levels. And hopefully, the levels that we can be trusted for are going, growing and expanding. Can I say theologically, God has trust in us as well. And as he sees that we grow and mature, he gives us more and more assets, more and more responsibility. And this gets really heavy theologically, because you will come to the point where you see human life on the earth is the gymnasium for the main event, which is eternity. And what this is all about right now is building up what we can be trusted for. Because ultimately, and we talked about this earlier in one of these master principles, God is going to trust his children, his family, to co-manage the created order. The bridge of trust, the bridge of knowledge, the bridge of character that qualifies us to handle more and more weight, more and more load limits on the bridges of who we are and the power that we have. That's what God's all about, is building that. And trust is built on our history, the history of what have we done, who are we, based on how we've related people and what we've done. I am coming to an end here of our time together. These four teaching lessons on these 12 master principles. Again, I want to emphasize, this is not theory. These are not theoretical principles. These are absolutely true principles. They're all over the scriptures. I made the decision that when I communicated on this, I wasn't going to be quoting a lot of Bible verses, because frankly, I'm hoping that people who are not yet in the faith are going to be attracted to the reality levels, the provable levels, based on what their own life has seen. I'm believing there is no built-in obsolescence, which is really what we were talking about when we were talking about trusting people's products or services. Is there built-in obsolescence here? Is this solid or is this honeycombed so it can be easily crushed? I'm hoping that you not just recognize these 12 master principles as being operable in your life, because they are in one form or another, to one degree or another. I am hoping, because of the principle of reciprocity, that out of loving our neighbor as we love ourselves, we will do everything we can to take the spheres of our influence, the gardens, as it were, that God has appointed us to tend. And into our gardens, into our families, into our colleagues where we work, into our brothers and sisters in the churches, in the spiritual areas where we're joined with other believers, in the world of economics and the way that we handle and measure the responsibility of wealth that gives us. Because living by these 12 principles, I will guarantee you, will show up in the wealth dimension at some point. I'm hoping that in the principle of reciprocity, of loving our neighbors, that we will do everything we can to model the reality of this. There's a phrase which I avoid and don't avoid, depending on the audience, called being epistemologically self-conscious. What that means, big words, but what it means to be epistemologically self-conscious, it means that you are aware of what you're doing. You're aware of why you're doing it. You're aware of the principles that are operable and that you're using to function on. You're aware of the concepts and ideas and the process of applying them properly. You are self-consciously aware that every day is training day. Every day is training day in practicing the truths and the applications of not just these 12 master principles, but other principles that you would put on your list. And I would hope, by the way, they're true in every generation, true in every ethnic group, and true in every jurisdiction. Well, All I can say is it's been my privilege, and I sincerely mean this. I pray that your awareness, which I know many of you are aware of all of these, some of you are aware of some of them, but not all of them, but that the real issue is that we would practice these truths, that these principles would be honed to the skill level where they really begin to bring transformation to this world. I leave you with that. May the discovery and the process and the desire, the love, make you epistemologically self-conscious, because that means that you have become a real functioning disciple, which is what those fancy words really mean. You are a disciplined, self-conscious learner. My fellow disciples, the Lord bless you and help you deploy what we've just shared together. Amen.
This is a copyrighted program of Go Strategic, Santa Rosa, California. Unauthorized reproduction is prohibited. Go Strategic is an international nonprofit organization that educates and equips leaders and others for effective service and leadership using biblical principles. For more information, visit us online at www.gostrategic.org.